9 episodes, several battles, big reveals, and a lot of different hairstyles, WandaVision has come to an end on Disney+.
What happened to Wanda? What happened to Vision? What happened to the other Vision? And is it really safe to say it was Agatha all along? We've got a lot to talk about. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. In this spoiler-packed episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're wrapping up WandaVision, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Welcome to banking reimagined. Capital One checking and savings accounts have no fees or minimums and a top-rated banking app that lets you manage your money anytime, anywhere. Check on the account balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money on the go. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. It's just the two of us today, so let's get to it. WandaVision began as a series that parodied different sitcom formats, The Dick Van Dyke Show, Bewitched, eventually even Modern Family. Again, major spoilers ahead and throughout. These were fantasies that Wanda Maximoff, played by Elizabeth Olsen, created for herself after the death of her true love, the Synthezoid. That's nice. A word Glenn taught me.
Nice.
The Synthezoid Vision, played by Paul Bettany. And also, this was these 9 episodes served as Wanda's introduction to the fact that she's not a regular superhero. She's a witch. Specifically, she's the Scarlet Witch. She was introduced to all of this by another witch, Agatha Harkness, who was played by Catherine Hahn. Meanwhile, law enforcement led by Monica Rambeau, played by Teyonah Parris, Jimmy played by Randall Park, and Darcy played by Kat Dennings tried to save the town Wanda had taken over for this fantasy world and perhaps save Wanda herself. So, you know, you got to get her out of. She's kind of created this bubble world. And the show, by the way, we should mention, was created by Jack Schaefer. You know, Glenn, this is a show that they had very high hopes for. It was a big part of kind of the push of Disney+. In the end, how do you think it went?
Mixed solid, I think. I mean, my big worry was that all that sitcom stuff would just end up being a gimmick without any real connection to who Wanda was as a character. And in fairness, we didn't know who Wanda was as a character going into this show. They addressed that. They made a pretty good case that Wanda associates American sitcoms with feelings of family and safety and home. And it's also the moment she lost that family and safety at home that triggered her powers. So that goes to who she is, I think. I'm not mad that the Dick Van Dyke Show episode, Looks Like a Walnut, was featured so prominently because I love that show. I love that episode.
Yeah.
This ultimately was a show about grief. So the ultimate outcome was preordained. She'd lose Vision. I like how it was executed, though, because this couple never got enough screen time in the MCU, and they got plenty of it here, even though most of it was kind of, you know, at a slant or through a scrim. Love these two actors. I love what Elizabeth Olsen brought, especially to the 7th episode, which was called Breaking the Fourth Wall, because she was doing a Modern Family Julie Bowen riff that was spot on. We know that Wanda's going to feature prominently in the next Doctor Strange film, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and I'm okay with where we left her. She's coming to terms with her power. She knows that Billy and Tommy are still out there somewhere. I also like the fact that they didn't kill off Catherine Hahn's character because they're not idiots, and I would have started overturning tables, and I think much of the internet would have joined me. Wanda saying, I know where to find you if I need you, is basically hanging a big old lampshade on the fact that she'll be back, so that's good. But the Monica Rambeau stuff, when you look at this series, all 9 episodes, that stuff really seems undercooked to me. I mean, we get her origin story, sort of. We kind of see her powers, maybe. It really seems shoehorned in, and, you know, she kept getting sidelined in a weird way. Also, ultimately, as your review points out, it really hand-waves the fact that Wanda traumatized thousands of people in a really tone-deaf way by making her seem like a martyr. Like, that's the approach we're taking? Woof.
Because she created this world in this place called Westview, and in order to do that, she essentially took over the minds and bodies of all of the people who lived there to make them essentially parts of her TV show that she was the star of. Because in order to save the people of Westview, she has to give up her TV show and give up her, Vision and her kids, all of whom she's kind of created with her mind and witchy powers. You know, when she walks back out into the Westview, the people there are all rather angry because they've been conscious of what she's doing, which is one of the things that makes it horrifying. Mm-hmm. They've known that this was what was happening and they know it's her doing it. So when she goes out into the town after she's finally kind of let everybody go, she goes out there and they're all kind of giving her the stink eye, which makes sense. And then she has this exchange with Monica.
They'll never know what you sacrificed for them. It wouldn't change how they see me.
And my reaction was like, yeah, it wouldn't change how they feel about you. It wouldn't change how they see you because it wouldn't change what you did. And right. I was surprised that they kind of went for this, I shall silently never reveal my good works. Like, it felt very strange to me. I kept waiting for her to apologize to all these people, to express her profound regret for the losses she had inflicted on them.
Yeah, and I was hoping we'd get past that with this character, because in Civil War, you know, it's Scarlet Witch's power kind of going nuts that caused a lot of
right.
deaths. And so, like, that's always been a part of her, and I would love for us to get past the fact that she can't control her powers and all that stuff as a motivation. It doesn't go anywhere, and repeating it here at the end where she grew so much as a character kind of felt a little off to me.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned how little screen time this couple sort of had in the MCU prior to now, because they had played this in the movies, in the last couple of movies, as sort of a great epic love story between these two. And I always had this feeling of like, is it? Like, because you really didn't see very much of it. You saw little tiny bits of it, and you sort of understood, I think through the quality of the acting, you sort of could get a sense of their relationship. But I do think it was wise to sort of pull back and give that relationship all this room to breathe, give these actors all this room to work together. I think Bettany has such a hard job because he is a synthezoid. And in this case, he's like a synthezoid, another level removed from reality, because he's a synthezoid she's created. You know, the fact that he's able to make that character compelling and in love is pretty impressive. I do care about their relationship now. I found the fact that she has to let him go effective. So one of the things that we mentioned in passing is that the bad guys, the sort of law enforcement arm of the bad guys, had put back together Vision's body because he died in the movies. So they put him back together, his body, but that wasn't the same him that Wanda had created. That was a different him, which you could tell because he was all white. And so when they brought him back, he was like just the true robot, right? He didn't have the soul of Vision. So you had also in this finale, the face-off between the synthezoids. I know, I said robot. People are going to send me letters. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the Battle of the Synthezoids?
You know, we get a little punchy-punchy, phasey-phasey, and then ultimately Vision talks White Vision out of his programming.
You are familiar with the thought experiment, the ship of Theseus in the field of identity metaphysics?
Naturally. The ship of Theseus is an artifact in a museum. Over time, its planks of wood rot and are replaced with new planks. When no original plank remains, is it still the ship of Theseus?
Secondly, if those removed planks are restored and reassembled free of the rot, is that the ship of Theseus?
Neither is the true ship. Both are the true ship.
On one sense, that's kind of a cop-out. On the other sense, it has a long history. Like, Captain Kirk, back in the day on Star Trek, was always talking computers into self-destructing.
Yeah.
That was his thing. He was making out with alien princesses and talking computers into self-destructing. So I kind of bought it. You know, there's a cottage industry around the speculation around a show like this.
Sure.
But I have determined with this show that the culture of speculation isn't for me, because when you indulge in so many possibilities, when the actuality arrives, it can't help but feel smaller.
Right.
I'll give an example. In an interview, Paul Bettany said he got a chance to work with an actor he's wanted to work with all his life in the finale, which led people to comb over past interviews where he gets asked about his acting idols, and he mentions, you know, Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. And there was this strong speculation for a long time that Agnes was actually working for some major malevolent force in the MCU, because we had to set up the Doctor Strange
right.
movie. So was that Mephisto? Was that
yeah.
Nightmare? All of whom was tangled with Doctor Strange. So it's like, what if Al Pacino shows up in the finale? And even though I knew better, Linda, I had this image in my head of Al Pacino in a big wig with pointy ears and a cape. You know, puny mortals, hooah! Like,
yeah.
I couldn't get it out of my damn
yeah.
head. So I kept waiting for a reveal that wasn't coming. And when that happens, you don't see the actual thing unspooling before you, clearly. So clearly, what the actor Paul Bettany wanted all his life was to act against the actor Paul Bettany. So that is some quality trolling, and I am totally here for that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, particularly with these kinds of shows, as you say, because there is a cottage industry, unfortunately, there's a chance that somebody is going to propose an outcome that you like better than what the outcome turns out to be, or that you think is more interesting.
Right, especially if it goes, it pulls from deep, like, Marvel lore, as many of these theories did.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I think I had the advantage with this show, interestingly, of not being super steeped in Marvel lore. Typically, after an episode of this, I would get in touch with either you or one of my other friends who's super into Marvel stuff, and kind of say, like, remind me of, like, who is this character that Monica is kind of turning into? Or what do I need to know about White Vision? I think the soul of the show for me was always this relationship, this idea of her kind of overwhelming grief and loss, which obviously, you know, I hate to say particularly right now, I think that to me was the reason to watch the show. It's an Elizabeth Olsen show about being kind of overwhelmed by grief and loss. And as that, I thought it was very effective. When you start to get her and Agatha kind of up in the sky shooting red and purple beams at each other, I tend to, and that's just purely my taste, I kind of tune out of those parts. I just want to know how it turned out, like, as opposed to being, ooh, that's a very, you know, I didn't think the battle stuff was all that exciting. As you say, there's something kind of classic about winding up with, you know, Vision out logicking Vision while they're floating in a library. It feels very, like, I like that kind of stuff, but I didn't think it was that inventive of battle.
Yeah, see, we're just different people, because the stuff in the sky with the rune reveal, which, you know, they set up, they really hit the gas on that. They really set it up in a previous episode. So when it was revealed, I was like, yes, sure, absolutely, I'm here for that.
Yeah. Well, you're a witch guy. And I'm a sitcom mom.
You're a feelings person.
Sitcom, I'm a feelings person. Together, we are an excellent synthesoid. All right. We want to know what you think about WandaVision. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at PCHH. Before we go, we want to remind you that we are going to be doing an episode about the best Muppets. And we want to know which Muppets you think are the best. We have very hot audience response to this so far. You can vote for your favorite Muppets at npr.org/Muppets. Again, vote for your favorite Muppets exactly where you would think you would at npr.org/Muppets. That brings us to the end of our show. Glenn, it is always good to chat with you.
I loved it. Thank you.
And we will see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about actor Delroy Lindo's essential performances.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of Ask Me Another. I love film, food, TV, and clothes, so I was thrilled to talk with clothing designer, restaurateur, and Fresh Off the Boat series creator Eddie Huang about his debut film, Boogie, and play a game with him. Listen now to the Ask Me Another podcast from NPR.